Do you want to hear the theme music? Hey, do you want to hear the theme music? Hey, hey, do you want to hear the theme music? Well, here it comes.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, a trusty old Red Rider Carbine Action 2 on the Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. It's so good to have you here. We're going to start with the interactive bit. I know in the last episode, the interactive bit wasn't quite what we were looking for, but I know we can do a better job this episode. So, are you ready? You don't have to answer that. This is not part of the interactive bit. You don't have to answer yet. We're starting the interactive bit now. Okay, here we go. Right. How are you? Don't ignore me. How are you? Seriously, don't ignore me. That's rude. Don't you turn your back on me. Don't you turn your back on me. How dare you? We're just trying to do the interactive bit. That's all. How could you? I'm furious. And scene. How was that? It's good, wasn't it? Yeah, I thought it went well that time. Cool. So, I've got quite a few things to chat about before we get into the show. First up, I received a lovely email from the wonderful Shelley Arnold. You'll remember Shelley Arnold. She's the owner of her fantastic Christmas village. We chat every Christmas. And she went camping on the weekend and she passed through Christmas, Michigan. And she sent me some pictures. And you know what? It had been snowing there. It was a white Christmas in Michigan. There you go. Thank you so much for the pictures, Shelley. And I've been thinking I should have a look at this Christmas town in Michigan and see if they've got anything interesting to say. So yeah, thanks again for that, Shelley. Also, do you remember last episode we talked about Black Peter? Don't want to go into that again. But Bob Baker, who is in every episode, our self-appointed podcast barman, he sent me some pictures. He'd been to the Netherlands and he sent me some pictures of him in the Netherlands with like pictures of Black Peter in the background. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to put them online. I want nothing more to do with that. But thanks for sending them through, Bob. Interesting pictures. And I don't know if I said anything major in the last episode to get people to contact me, but I actually had 3 emails from people just saying, yeah, I'm listening to the show. And that was Jack Unverfirth, I hope I said that right, Jack, Ty Virgin and Henrik Skov. So that was nice, yeah, just to get a bit of contact. If you want to get in touch, well, I'll give you the details at the end, but it's always nice to hear from listeners. Turns out, I thought I only had 2 listeners. Turns out I've got 3, so that's nice. I think that's all the housekeeping, so let's get started with the show. We're going to begin with this.
Jingle, jingle, jingle for segment.
Well, I mentioned a few people that have been in contact, and also, since the last episode, I had a lovely email from Benji Pearson, and he sent us in a wonderful Christmas memory. So, without further ado, I'll let Benji do the rest. Here it comes.
Hey Jack, it's Benji Pearson here, and I have a Christmas story for you. I'm the youngest of my parents' 10 children, and I am 4.5 years younger than my next sibling. That one thing you must remember, or nothing that follows, will seem quite as wondrous. One of my favorite Christmas memories as a child was our family tradition of picking our stockings for the year. Long before I was born, my siblings had 9 coordinating but individual multicolored felt stockings made to look like ski boots, or like the lift bro at the ski resort recently called, old school boots. But really, they were just modern ski boots for the 1970s and 80s. As a child, I quickly learned that my siblings established tradition of deciding who got what stocking for that year. As the Christmas decorations were pulled out of the storage room near the beginning of December, one sibling would cut up a piece of paper and write the numbers 1 through 10, or however many were still at home that year. Half of my siblings were adults by the time I was 5. Then, we would take turns drawing our number from a bowl. The number we drew would correspond to a number on the back of the felt stockings. That was our stocking for that Christmas. These were unusual stockings, not like any stockings I saw in Christmas movies or on Christmas cards. But they were our family stockings, and well represented us as a skiing family living in the mountains of Utah, the greatest snow on earth. The tradition of picking our stocking number from a bowl died out as my siblings grew up, left home, and had children of their own. Some Christmases, they would bring their children, my nieces and nephews, home for Christmas morning, but it wasn't really the same. The last Christmas we drew our stocking numbers, there were just three of us at home. My two teenage siblings, a brother and sister, and me still very much believing in the magic self. I insisted on keeping the tradition alive, but that didn't go too far. When we were only working on with three numbers in the bowl, in the end, we had our favorite ski boots, and we just went with those. 20 years later, my parents had moved house twice, and I was preparing to set up their Christmas decorations. As I stumbled upon a box of Christmas decorations that hadn't been opened since the last move, it was, can you believe it, the felt boot stockings. As I rummaged through the box of stockings, with a tear in my eye and a smile on my face, I noticed that in addition to the stockings not being homemade, which I always thought they were, that one stocking was different than the rest. Each felt stocking ski boot was this exact same size, with in varying colors and patterns. Each had a number written on the back with a black marker, but one was smaller, not shaped like a ski boot, and had a felt cutout of the Mouse King from the Nutcracker. Can you guess which number was on the back of that one? The number 10, of course. Never in my whole life had I realized that the number 10 stocking was different from the rest. Now, please don't think that I'm throwing a pity party for myself being different. Just the opposite, in fact. At that moment, I realized that while I came late to the game to my large group of siblings, my family wanted me to feel included, to have a new stocking in the lineup, to have 10 stockings to draw from. And with the fact that I'm recording this story, this Christmas story, mind you, in the middle of March, would prove when it comes to Christmas, I am just a little bit different than the rest. I am grateful for this tradition and the spirit of Christmas that my parents and siblings provided for me. I learned how to keep Christmas well, and if any man alive possessed that knowledge, it is me. And may it truly be said of all of us, and as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
What a lovely story. You know, it's interesting, you sort of listen to it, and you've got like this tradition that builds and builds and builds, and then sadly it sort of fades out, and I guess that's what happens. But then, you know, Benji and his brothers and sisters, they all went off, started their own families, and they build their own traditions. And that's something that me and my girls have been doing. You know, we had traditions when I was with my mum and dad, and now we've got traditions with my girls. Yeah, I guess that's the way Christmas progresses. If you've got a Christmas memory you want to share, please do send it in. You don't have to record it, I'd prefer it if you did, but if you just want to send me an email with your Christmas memory, I'll happily read it out on the podcast so everyone else gets to hear it. The email address and everything will be at the end of the show. Thanks again to Benji. I really appreciate you taking the time and recording that for us. A wonderful memory. Now let's move on, and we're going to do this. Oh, wow. So now it's time for Christmas Every Day from Bob Baker, our self-appointed podcast barman. And yeah, Bob, take it away.
Thanks, Jack. One of the best ways to keep Christmas every day is to find a way to stretch your gifts over the bland wasteland between the holidays. Now, I may sound like RuPaul, but today's suggestion is to accessorize. If you think about it, one of the best enhancements over the past few years has been these new and improved advent calendars. In the past, they were used to help impatient children suffer through the endless countdown to Christmas. They had little pictures or pieces of chocolate. But now we have all sorts of themed calendars retargeted for adults. They are packed with miniature gifts of food, drinks, or trendy products, all to excite your inner child. Now, most kids will think getting a pair of socks is one of the most disappointing presents ever. But for me, getting an advent calendar that offers me a new pair of festive socks behind each door, it's the best. Most have splashy colors and are tied to popular holiday films. These make the perfect gift for us Yulephiles. And with enough of them, you can spread your sock collection all year long. I am talking Christmas socks every day. There is nothing better than sitting in a business meeting in May or in September and you cross your legs. When your pants leg rides up, there on display is the Norwal from Elf. Or maybe Yukon Cornelius. Or just some Reese or a Santa. It always provides a chuckle, and usually just at the time when you need it most. So how do you dip your toe into the daily Christmas pool? Let Jack know, and we'll feature it here.
I like that a lot, actually. That's a really good idea. You know, put some Christmas socks on, and then every so often, you'll just get a glimpse of them and think, oh yeah, Christmas. That was a good one, Bob. Thank you so much for that. He'll be back again later on in the show. But right now, it's time for this...
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
This episode's version of A Christmas Carol. That's how I always start it, isn't it? This episode's version of A Christmas Carol. This episode's version of A Christmas Carol. This episode... Well, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is from 1982. It was made by Burbank Films in Australia. So Burbank Films made a lot of adaptations of classic works of literature. The first one they did was Oliver Twist in 1982. Then it was followed up with this one. They did a lot of Sherlock Holmes ones. Then they did a load more Dickens ones. And then they did all sorts of other ones like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Alice in Wonderland, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, that sort of thing. They did loads of different adaptations. This one is, of course, A Christmas Carol, and it's 75 minutes long. And are you ready for this, boys and girls? This is, in my opinion, the closest adaptation yet of the book that I have covered. Yeah, there's a few caveats to that, but as it stands, as you go through it, it's amazing how much they've kept in and how closely they've gone to the book. The way I'm going to look at it is I'm just going to run through the whole thing, tell you what they did right, tell you what they did wrong. First up, it starts... It's interesting because you get an idea for the style of the animation. It's like a town, it's London, obviously. And the background, there's lots of people, but no one's moving. No one's moving, it's fairly cheap. A few people in the foreground might be moving a bit, but generally, the background, everyone's just standing still. Even though there's like three people, there might be kids playing, but they ain't moving, they're just standing there. It's not an expensive production, so don't expect the best quality animation. But, you know, it's decent enough. You can tell the people are people, they're not just stick figures, you know, so you got that going for it. Anyway, it starts off... Like I say, you've got the streets. And then Scrooge comes walking down the street. This bit they've added, didn't need to, I suppose. There's some boy nicks a loaf of bread from a shop. And he comes running out and he knocks into Scrooge. Scrooge grabs him by the shoulder and shakes him. And he drops the loaf of bread. I don't quite know what the relevance of that was, really. And now I'm starting to think that you're thinking, are you sure this is the best adaptation you've ever seen? It does improve, okay? He goes into his counting house and... Cratchit's there and Scrooge is like looking at the fire and it's a bit small and he's like, he picks up a tiny bit of coal and chucks it in, just a tiny bit. And then in comes Fred, and this is the problem that I have with it, okay? So generally, like I said, it is very close to the original text, but the script, the quoted text, is frequently very different. I'll play a little bit for you now.
Why should a poor man like you be merry?
By nature. Why should a rich man like you be so grumpy?
Bah, humbug.
If you're familiar with the text, you'd know that the proper words were, what right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough. Come then, what right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough. The sentiments are the same. This is just one example that I'm picking. The sentiments are the same in all the text, but most of the time they change the wording. There's the bit later on where he says to Cratchit, you'll lose your job, rather than saying you'll lose your position. It's just the words have changed. To some, you might think, this is so minor. And it is minor, but if you're a purist, and if you really are familiar with the book, these little things do stand out. Other than that, however, well, we'll carry on. So, at this point, I should talk about the voices. To be honest, no one in it is particularly famous, apart from the chap that voices Scrooge. Scrooge is played by a chap called Ron Haddock. Sadly, he passed away in 2020 at the age of 90. So that means he would have been 52 when he played Scrooge. He wasn't only an actor, but he was also a professional cricketer in his younger years. I looked through the stuff he'd been in. There's a couple of things I've sort of half recognised, but he was in a film called Quigley Down Under, which was with Tom Selleck. It was like a western set in Australia. An interesting fact, his wife, her maiden name was Quigley. So that's something, I suppose, that has nothing to do with Christmas. So congratulations to me. Now, let's move on. Sorry, the reason I wanted to mention the voices at this point is because the chap who voices Nephew Fred, his name's Robin Stewart, and he also voiced The Ghost of Christmas Past, child version of Scrooge, and the young lad that goes and fetches the turkey. So, yeah, just thought I'd mention that. While Scrooge is talking to Nephew Fred, the carol singer comes to the door and sings Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Now, I've talked about this before, and it annoys me that I don't think I've ever seen a version, or maybe there's one, but I can't remember which one it was, where the little boy, quite often they leave out the carol singer at Scrooge's door, but if they do have him, it's very rare that he sings God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, which is the song in the book. Here he sings Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and Scrooge tells him to clear off. Then he notices that Fred's put a Christmas wreath, on his door, and he gives it back to Fred by putting it over his head. And then Fred is nice enough to go and give it to the little carol singing boy. So, you know, what goes around comes around, I guess. Is that right? Does that make sense? Probably not. Then in come the two portly gentlemen. Now, they are both fairly portly. One is taller than the other, but he's still got a bit of a belly, so portly. I'll accept that. Well done. And again, it's the same as what I mentioned earlier. They go through the motions, the sentiments are there, but they change the wording of the conversation, and I wish they hadn't. But other than that, they do a good job of it. And now we come to one of the reasons this is such an accurate version, because when Bob leaves, he goes down a slide, an ice slide, in the street. You see it in some versions of A Christmas Carol, not many, a few leave it out, but it was great to see it here. And also, he goes home and he plays Blind Man's Buff with the family, and that is mentioned in the book, and I've never seen that anywhere else, so I was really impressed with that. The scene is a very short one, but obviously they're playing Blind Man's Buff, and Tiny Tim goes, he's not blindfolded, Bob Cratchit is, but Tiny Tim catches Bob Cratchit, which I think is meant to be cute. Yeah. Then we see Scrooge in his melancholy tavern. Now, I won't lie to you, the tavern doesn't look that melancholy. It looks like the rest of the people are having a good time. It looks like Scrooge is being melancholy. But again, it's nice to see that. It's normally completely stepped over, but this time we get to see it, that he goes to the tavern. Then he goes home. Then we see the face in the knocker. And when he goes inside, he does actually look behind the door, only briefly, but normally that's left out as well. So I like that. Then he goes around the house, like checking all the rooms and that. And now we get to the entrance of Jacob Marley. Now, Jacob Marley is voiced by a gentleman by the name of Bill Conn, who also voiced the portly gentleman, Scrooge's schoolmaster, Mr. Fezziwig, the Ghost of Christmas Present, Topper from Fred's Christmas Day, and Old Joe as well. So all of those. So well done, Bill Conn. Here's the thing. When Jacob Marley turns up, for some reason, he has the eye makeup of Gene Simmons out of Kiss. I'm not kidding. You've got to have a look at it. It's like proper, well, it looks like Gene Simmons out of Kiss. That's what his eyes look like. I don't know why. I don't know why they've done it that way, but that's what they've done. Marley talks about his life. Again, this is another one where, you know, the sentiments are the same, but the words are different. And when he's talking about his life, we sort of see flashbacks of what Marley was like as a younger man. You don't hear it. It's just like the voiceover as he's talking about his life. I thought that was interesting. You know, they didn't need it. I've not seen it before, though, so it was interesting. And then there's a little bit where he's like saying, you know, why don't you put some more coal on the fire? And Scrooge is like, well, coal's expensive. So Jacob Marley throws a chair in the fire. And it's like, well, I think a chair is a bit more expensive than a lump of coal. But thanks for doing that. At least it's warmer, I suppose. Jacob Marley finishes telling Scrooge what's going to happen and he leaves. And then we look out the window and I don't quite know why they did this, but this is something else that is wrong with this, where there should be more people around. There's this time they only have one spirit in the street who's upset because he can't help the poor lady. You know the bit I mean? You know, the idea that all these spirits are tormented because they can't do the good they should have done when they were alive. In this version, there's only one. He's just hanging there going, oh, that's pretty much it. Then Scrooge goes to bed. He wakes up. Who should be there? It's only the Ghost of Christmas Past. Yeah. And this is an interesting choice that he's got yellow hair, or blonde hair, I suppose. He's a young boy, probably, I'm guessing he's around about 11 or 12 sort of age, maybe a bit older, wearing like a very short toga, just like over one shoulder. That's it, really? Yeah, not really anything like in the book, but that was the choice they went with. And they take Scrooge back in time to when he was growing up. And this, again, another good bit. You know the bit where he's like, what's that on your cheek? Because Scrooge has got a tear running down his cheek. Oh, it's a pimple. They use that line, which was nice. Then he goes to the school and Ali Baba's there. And if you remember the book, there's a bit where it talks about how Scrooge was sitting on his own. He was a lonely boy and he just sit there reading, and he'd conjure up in his mind all the things that he was reading about. And in the book it says, like, you could see Ali Baba out the window. And I'm going to play the bit for you now, actually.
Look, it's Ali Baba. One Christmas he came to visit when this boy was left all alone. The boy saw him in the window, just like that.
The boy must have been dreaming.
Yes, yes. It must have been a dream.
The boy was probably lonely.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it was interesting. I wasn't quite sure what was going on there. As if, did Scrooge actually think Ali Baba had been there? I don't know, yeah. Anyway, you know, that's the bit. Then Fan turns up, his sister, to take him home. And have a listen to her voice.
I've come to bring you home, dear brother.
Home? Are you sure, little Fan?
Yes, yes. Home for good. Home forever.
Who sent you?
Father did. He sent me in a coach to get you. Oh, Father's so much kinder now than he used to be. And home is like heaven. Oh, come on. We're going to have the merriest Christmas of all time.
You're quite a woman, little Fan.
Now, if you're about my age, from the UK or Australia possibly, you'd remember having watched Neighbours pretty much most of your teen years. And Fan is voiced by Anne Haddie, who did the voice of Helen Daniels.
Neighbours, everybody needs good neighbours.
She was in Neighbours for like 13 years. She passed away in 1999. But here's an interesting fact. She's playing Fan. You ready? She's the same age as the chap who's playing Scrooge. Yeah, there you go. That's something, isn't it? She was 52 when she was playing Scrooge's sister. So there's that, yeah. Right, then we go to Fezziwigs, and Scrooge is there with Dick Wilkins. And this is a shame, because this goes back to what I was talking about earlier about the ghosts in the street. There's only six people at the party. You got Fezziwig and his wife. You got Fezziwig's two daughters. You got Dick Wilkins. And you've got Scrooge. And then you've got the fiddle player. So you've got like seven people, I suppose. And that's it. And that's a shame, that is. But the sad thing is, I think that's down to the animation. I think they just... Remember at the start when I said, like, you had street scenes, there's no one moving? It's the same as this. They just didn't have the quality of animation where they could have more people moving around in the background and that. So they've only got six people there. It's a bit of a shame. That's how I feel about that. And Scrooge is there, dancing away. And the Ghost of Christmas Past gives him a bit of a hard time about it, actually. Here you go.
What's the matter with you? Got a beetle in your pants?
Yeah, so that's the Fezziwig bit. So now we move on to the scene with Belle. And I've got to say, I was impressed that, you know, Belle wasn't from the previous scene, because we've talked about this in previous episodes where most adaptations suggest that Scrooge meets Belle at Fezziwig's Christmas party. Well, in this one, that's not suggested at all. And the Ghost of Christmas Past makes a bit of a comment about Scrooge's age. Have a listen to this.
You were a bit older here. Were you 35?
25.
The face is that of a 35-year-old.
I was 25.
Yeah, there we go. So then we see Belle all grown up, and that scene is pretty much spot on. And again, this is one of those scenes that you don't often see, and they added it in, and I'm really impressed with that, especially for an animated version to have it, where you see Belle grown up as a matronly woman with all her children running around. So good on them for that one. So then Scrooge is back in his bed, and of course next we're greeted by the Ghost of Christmas Present. And Scrooge says, I learned a lesson from the previous ghost and I'm keen to learn from you. I mention that because I'm going to come back to it later. So then they do something that you often, again, is missed out in the books. We see the street scene where people are running to the baker's to get their turkeys cooked, and it actually explains about the fact that most people didn't have an oven, and so the bakers, which wasn't allowed to sell bread on a Sunday, would open their doors so people could use the oven to cook their Sunday roast. And that's talked about in this, and that's very, very rare that that's done. So I was impressed with that. And there's also a bit here where the ghost of Christmas present is sprinkling his torch over the people's food, and you see it sort of magically grow because this is a Christmas dinner. And there's another bit where two blokes actually have a bit of an argument, so the ghost sprinkles them with a bit of magic dust and they stop arguing, which is nice. So again, these are bits that you don't see. I don't know if I've seen that in any other version. So that's two things they've got in this one that I've never seen before. So again, great work on that. We go to the Cratchit's house, and that is very much like the book. You know, they pretty much cover all bases. Again, the script is different to the text in the book, but you know, they do their bit. And Tiny Tim sings, which you don't always see, but quite often you do. So that was nice though, that Tiny Tim sings. Then the Ghost of Christmas Present takes Scrooge off to a lighthouse. It's the only place they go in between Cratchit's and Fred's. In the book, they do go to a lot more places. They go to like where a lot of miners are living. They go out to sea where there's people on a boat celebrating Christmas. In this one, it's just the lighthouse. But, you know, I'm impressed that they did that. Then they go to Fred's place. And this bothered me a bit, sadly, because there's only four people there. And in most versions, there's a lot of people there. I mean, I've seen versions, there's one version I saw, where there was more people at Fred's house than they were at Fezziwig's party. And I don't mean this version of Fezziwig's party. I mean, in the same film that, you know what I mean. Anyway, the conversation is pretty much exactly the same. They talk about games they could play, and they play the 20 questions game, or yes and no game. And Scrooge is the butt of the joke in that one. And of course, in this scene, Fred's wife is heavily pregnant. Okay, she's not. But, you know, we did discuss that. At the end of that scene, Scrooge and the ghost are in the street, and we get to see the two children, Ignorance and Want. Yeah, at this point, because the Ghost of Christmas Present, he's got white hair and a white beard, he can't look any older. You know, like he starts to age in certain versions, because that's what it says, you know, why do you grow old? In this one, he starts to sort of flicker out, so you don't see him, and then he disappears. And the two children are still left there. It's like, well, don't leave your kids with me, mate. I'm not looking after. I'm no babysitter. That's not why I'm here. Then who should turn up but, of course, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And they do call him the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, not the Ghost of Christmas Future, so well done. He looks pretty much the same as described in the book, apart from it looks like one of his hands is holding the robe up to his shoulder across his body. It's hard to explain over a podcast, but it looks like he's not got both his hands by his sides. One hand is constantly up across his body and holding it. Anyway, that's a minor thing. First up, we go and see the portly gentleman. See, this is the thing. They changed this slightly. Rather than it be some random men in the street that we haven't met in the book yet, it's the portly gentleman that are talking about the fact that Scrooge has passed. Of course, they don't mention his name's Scrooge. Then there's a bit in the book where they go to the exchange and Scrooge isn't where he's normally stood. And in this version, they go to the tavern where Scrooge normally goes for his lunch. I don't know why they changed that. I suppose because we'd seen him in the tavern earlier, it makes sort of a bit of sense. But, you know, sort of they paid lip service to it, but they didn't quite hit the beat on that one. Then it's old Joe's, and it's pretty much the same again in the book. They do change the words, but the scene plays out the same way. And you've got, instead of the Undertaker himself, it's the Undertaker's man. It's like his boy that helps him rather than the Undertaker. And there's a bit here where Scrooge is sort of still showing that he hasn't changed much. Listen to this.
That man knows how to drive a bargain.
So, yeah, you see what I mean? Scrooge still sounds like he's a tight ass, really. By this point in the book, you'd start to think that he's changed. There was a few bits, actually, where Scrooge still makes comments when he's with the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Even though he's... The bit I mentioned earlier is that I've learnt my lesson and I'm keen to learn more from you, he says to the Ghost of Christmas Present. In the scenes with the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, seems like he's still harbouring some of those feelings of being a tight ass. So yeah, that's a shame. Then we go to the bedchamber where, you know, Scrooge just doesn't want to pull back the cloth to see who's laying in the bed there. That was impressive that they had that. You don't often see that scene. Then we go to the Cratchits, of course. Now in the book, Bob Cratchit goes upstairs and Tiny Tim is laying on one of the beds dead. In this one, we go upstairs and luckily the beds are empty, so we didn't have to look at a dead boy. So that was nice. And then Scrooge is going, but I want to know what happens to me in the future. So they go to his offices and there's a bloke there who's going, well, that's not even me. That bloke looks nothing like me. What's going on? That's not me. And there's a knock at the door, and it's the portly gentleman. And this time, obviously the guy who now runs Scrooge's offices, gives them a donation. And then we go to the grave and, you know, it's like, who was that man? And obviously it was you. Should have figured that out ages ago. Scrooge wakes up and he calls out to the boy in the street. Does the boy say Walker? No. No, he doesn't. In fact, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll go and buy it. Whereas most other episodes, the boy is like a bit incredulous. He's like, what? Really? Even if they don't say Walker, they'll say something. But in this one, no, he's like, sure, I'll go and buy it. And he buys. The boy comes back with the turkey and Scrooge pays for the cab, which again is in the book, so well done for that. Then Scrooge sees the portly gentleman in the street and gives him a donation, as in the book. And then he goes round to Fred's house with loads of presents and has dinner with them, again, like in the book. And then, again, as in the book, Bob Cratchit turns up late for work and Scrooge says he wants to raise his salary and talk about how they can look after Tiny Tim. And that's the end of the film. So, thanks for sitting through all of that. It might have taken a little while, but I think it was worth it. Was it worth it? I think it was, actually. This is a version. Do you know what? If only they'd kept to the script and they hadn't changed it, this to me would have been above, head and shoulders above all others, the most accurate version of A Christmas Carol I've ever seen. Unfortunately, because they changed the text, that's the main bit that drags it down. Otherwise, it's a decent showing, and yeah, why not have a look at it? Check it out. It's on YouTube if you want to watch it. It's only 72 minutes long, something like that. Just type in Christmas Carol Burbank Films and it will come up. And yeah, watch it. Check it out if you want. If you don't want to, don't. It's simple. Right. Now let's do this. Stories about St. Nicholas. Boys and girls, now it's time for our occasional segment where Scott Newman, our US correspondent, reads out a story about the life and times of St. Nicholas. So, without further ado, Scott, could you please read that story for me?
When all the bishops were gathered together in Nicaea to decide the great question threatening to split the early church, there were many long speeches. Such meetings can be very tiring. Once, during dinner, it looked as if Bishop Nicholas had dozed off, weary of the whole thing and unable to stay awake. As he slept, Nicholas heard voices calling his name, and leaving his sleeping body leaning on the table, he followed the voices. After traveling a long way, he came to a place in the middle of the sea. A mighty storm raged, putting a ship in great danger. The sails were shredded and the masts broken as if they were toothpicks. Sailors, clinging to the ship, cried to Nicholas for help. Nicholas raised his hands. The waves calmed and the thunder and lightning stopped. The sun came out over a sea once again calm. The grateful sailors thanked God for their rescue. Nicholas blessed the sailors and returned. In Nicaea, awakened at the table, Nicholas yawned and rubbed his eyes. Seeing he was now awake, the other bishops said, "So much has happened while you slept, Nicholas. We have missed you, our brother." "Yes, indeed," said Nicholas. "A ship has been saved and many sailors rescued." The bishops, completely unaware of what had happened, thought Nicholas meant the church was a ship and that the council had saved the church and its people.
What is that? What is that? So it's like, yeah, while you guys were here trying to sort out some questions about the church, I was off rescuing a whole shipload of sailors by calming those stormy waters. And I saved all those people. What was it? No, you didn't. You had a dream about a boat. That's what happened, St. Nicholas. Don't you sit there giving it the big one, telling everyone how special you are, saving the day. You did nothing. You've been asleep the whole time. That's like, imagine that was me there, right? And they woke me up and they're like, "Jack, you missed so much." You're like, "Yeah, I know. I was at school and I forgot to wear my bottom half of my clothes. So I was like trying to pull my t-shirt down, trying to cover my dinkle all day. It was awful. Yeah, that's the dream I would have had." And they're like, "What? How does that apply to the saving of the church? Oh, maybe his dinkle is the church and he's pulling down his..." What? No, it doesn't make any sense. That's the kind of dream I would have had. And yet Nicholas is there claiming he's some sort of Superman. Well, you ain't, St. Nicholas. All you did was slept while other people were doing all the hard work. I tell you what, glad it wasn't me, because I hate that dream. You know the dream I mean? Where you, like, it's always... I've never gone to school naked. I've always got, like, my top half on, but I'm, like, trying to pull my... And it's normally my pyjamas, actually. Sometimes it's a T-shirt, sometimes it's my pyjamas, and I'm trying to pull my top half of my a pyjama top down, trying to hide my like bumblebee and my dinkle, and it's like and trying to hide behind desks and stuff like that. Have you had that dream? So how does Donald Duck or even Winnie the Pooh, how do they get around? Do you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't dress like they do with my bottom. I can handle being dressed, you know, Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse I can handle where he's wearing shorts. I can walk around with my shirt off. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to show off anything. I ain't got a great figure. But at the same time, I'd rather be walking around in nothing but shorts than walking around with my dinkle and my bumblebee out. Has this got anything to do with Christmas? No. Thank you so much to Scott for the story about how St. Nicholas seems to think he's some sort of superhero in his sleep. Yeah, good work, Scott. If you're not listening to Scott's other podcasts, you need to be. Tinsel Tunes had a short hiatus, but it's back again now. And the latest episode came out about, when this comes out, it's probably about 2 weeks ago. And Dwayne Bailey, the original host of Tinsel Tunes, they're back together, him and Scott, and they talked about ska Christmas music. And it was a fantastic episode. They played loads of different ska tunes. I think you'd really enjoy it. And of course, Scott is also the co-host of the Christmas Morning podcast. So go and check those two out after you've listened to this one. Don't do it now, because I've still got other stuff to do. Okay? I'll tell you when you can leave, and it ain't yet. Right, sit back down. Thank you. Now it's time for this. Boys and girls, it's time now for our fantastic, and when I say fantastic, I mean crap, joke of the episode. You may remember that my wife gave me a Christmas joke toilet roll for Christmas, and each episode I've been reading out a joke for you. So here it comes. What do you get if you cross mistletoe and a duck? A Christmas quacker. Yeah, that's what you get. Again, it's one of those where you think, thank goodness Jack is going to wipe his arse with that joke. Isn't that a good thing? So it's sort of like a happy ending. The punchline is me wiping my bum with that joke. Thank you.
Do you hear what I hear?
Boys and girls, now it's time for Do You Hear What I Hear with Bob Baker. This episode, it's a cheeky one. Here it comes.
The beauty of alcohol? It allows you to run away from your problems without actually moving. Now, if you are tiring of the debate over whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie, there is a junior version of this game, and it's whether the film The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is a Christmas movie. Just like how John McClane is fighting the bad guys on Christmas Eve, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy, they take on the White Witch before Christmas, because in Narnia, it's always before Christmas. The holiday won't come until the witch is defeated. Now, Die Hard has Christmas music, ho ho ho, and a lot of fighting and dead bodies. In The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, it has snow, Father Christmas, and a lot of fighting, and characters turned into statues. And yet, I can somehow accept the Bruce Willis action film in Saving His Wife as festive merriment. But the Pevensey children as lords and ladies saving Aslan, doesn't give me the same holiday feels. One positive note, however, is that everyone in Narnia does seem to be British, even the animals. So when the beavers call Edmund a cheeky little blighter, my Do You Hear What I Hear ears perked up. Cheeky? Blighter? What is this? If someone is cheeky in the States, it means they either had Botox injections into their cheekbones or into their seat bones. Think Kim Kardashian. I mean, you do hear it used in TV and films, but it's in a Austin Powers type fashion, as a shorthand to mean, look, he said cheeky, he must be English. What we should like about this term is it means to be a little rude or disrespectful, but in a funny or a witty way. Americans tend to be less clever and more direct. The beauty of subtlety in the English form is that by being cheeky and not obnoxious, you're allowed to get away with slightly bad behavior. So what about blighter? What does it mean? Well, it is the milder PG version of bastard, which is the B word often found with cheeky. Now, you may disapprove of the person, but you don't dislike them. you find them more irritating than anything else. Our similar U.S. terms like jerk or idiot, they just don't have the same finesse as blighter. So today's lesson, if you aim to excite her, don't be a cheeky blighter. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Thanks for that, Bob. Great work as ever. I've got to say, I don't know if you use the term lippy as well. Cheeky and lippy. Like, cheeky's a bit more humorous. Lippy is a bit more rude, but they both sort of mean back chat. Yeah, or can mean back chat. They can mean other things as well. But great work with that. Yeah, I'm surprised Bob didn't mention the Cheeky Girls Christmas song, which I covered in episode 33. So, yeah, if you want to have a listen to that, check out episode 33. It's an awful song. But, you know, something, innit? Anyway, great work again, Bob. Now it's time for this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. And you're there thinking, oh, he's not doing a quiz again, is he? And the answer is yes, I am. I am doing the quiz. This is it. It's happening right now. And some of you might be thinking, oh, but the quiz, man. The quiz. And I'm thinking, yeah, you're right, the quiz. And you're thinking, no, I don't mean like that. I mean the quiz. And I'm saying, yeah, the quiz. And you're like, no, I don't like the quiz. And I'm like, why don't you like the quiz? And they're like, because I'm thick, all right? I'm not an intelligent man and I don't know any things. And that's why I don't like the quiz. Well, I do like the quiz. And it only takes about 5 minutes up of the show. So if we get started and you stop complaining, we'll get it over and done with in no time. I've got 10 questions for you, then I've got 10 answers. That's how quizzes work. First one. Which American founder of an hotel chain was born on Christmas Day 1887? Now, what makes that Christmassy is his birthday. That's all, but that's the question. Question number two. Ein Ruben in einen Birnenbaum is which of the gifts in the German version of the song The 12 Days of Christmas? Ein Ruben in einen Birnenbaum. Question number three. Is this true or false, right? This is my question to you, right? Is this true or am I making this up? Well, I'm not making it up. The book is. Or are they? You'll find out. The original mince pie filling was meat. Is that true? Is it false? Is it? I don't know. I do know, actually. I know what the answer is. Okay, question number four. In 2010, which Scottish singer's album, The Gift, became the first ever Christmas album to get to number one in the UK? Up until that point, right, people have been releasing their Christmas albums, their compilation albums. This is the first one that ever made it to number one. Now, I would have thought Michael Bublé's one would have made it to number one. Apparently not. The first person to do it in the UK charts is a Scottish singer. Whom is she? Question something. Members of which family and their guests are each weighed before and after the Christmas meal each year? Okay? Now, it is possible that there's more than one family in the world that does that, but there's a famous family. Whom are they? Question number something. In which 1995 part live action, part animated film does Ferdinand the Duck say, Christmas, Christmas dinner, yeah, dinner means death. Death means carnage. Christmas means carnage. I don't think he says it like that. And to be honest, this film's not that animated. It's mainly live action. Okay. Question something. What is the second line of the carol, Once in Royal David City? And now the only reason I've got this question in here, because I am aware that Once in Royal David City isn't that popular a song in many countries outside of the UK. The reason I've got it in there is because I have actually sung this song at least twice in the last 10 episodes. So, yeah, I want to know the second. If you've been listening carefully, you'll know what the second line of Once in Royal David City is. Question whatever. Complete the title of the 2014 film starring Anna Kendrick, Happy Blank. What is that blank? What is it? Tell me now. Question number something else. Which late author of fantasies wrote Father Christmas's Fake Beard, which was the third book in a series which was published in 2017? Other short stories of his include The Computer Who Wrote to Father Christmas and The Abominable Snow Baby. Right? So who wrote those books? Father Christmas's Fake Beard, The Computer Who Wrote to Father Christmas, and The Abominable Snow Baby. Last question. In which Dickens' novel, his first, do the main protagonist and three companions travel to Dingley Dell for a Christmas party? So pretty much, what was Charles Dickens' first novel? That's it. That's your 10 questions. Are you ready for the answers? You are? I should hope so. Here they come. Question number one. Which American founder of a hotel chain was born on Christmas Day 1887? That was Conrad Hilton. If you just put Hilton, I'll accept it because that's all I put and I accepted it when I put it. Question number two. Ein Ruben in einen Birnenbaum is which of the gifts in the German version of the song The 12 Days of Christmas? Now, I won't lie to you kids. I googled up on Google Translate Ruben, because I thought, well, that's got to be Robin, and because it sounds so much like Robin, and German is very closely related to English, I thought it's got to be like a Robin in a pear tree. I'm guessing that's what Birnenbaum, but is actually what I'm saying is, I googled it, turns out no, that's how you say partridge in German. It's a partridge in a pear tree. That's the answer. Question number three, I got that one, by the way. The question number three, the original mince pie and filling was meat. True or false? It's true, isn't it? Among other things, but yeah, they did have minced meat in mince pies. Question number four. In 2010, which Scottish singer's album, The Gift, became the first ever Christmas album to get to number one in the UK? It was Susan Boyle. And I would not have had a clue about that. So congratulations. I didn't even know she had a Christmas album, to be honest. So there you go, there's that. Next one. Members of which family and their guests are each weighed before and after the Christmas meal each year? It's the royal family. Can you believe that? Yeah. Do you know what? I didn't put anything for that one. And I should have just put the royal family because it popped into my head, but I thought, nah. And I ignored it. But no, it was the royal family. There you go. There's Prince Charles scoffing it all down, and then he goes and weighs himself. He's like, oh, roll me onto the scales. Roll me onto him. I can't walk. Oh. Yeah. Anyway, next one. In which 1995 part live action, part animated film does Ferdinand the Duck say, Christmas, Christmas dinner, yeah. Dinner means death. Death means carnage. Christmas means carnage. That's Babe. Yeah. You know, the sheep pig. And I didn't get that one either. Okay, what is the second line of the carol Once in Royal David City? Stood a lowly cattle shed. There you go. That was an easy one. If you're in the UK. If you're not in the UK, probably not quite as easy. And if you don't speak English, probably incredibly hard. Question whatever. Complete the title of the 2014 film starring Anna Kendrick, Happy Blank. It's Happy Christmas. I took a guess at that. I got it right. I hope you did too. Question number nine. Which late author of fantasies wrote Father Christmas's Fake Beard? It's the third book in a series which was published in 2017. Other short stories of his include The Computer Who Wrote to Father Christmas and The Abominable Snow Baby. The answer was Terry Pratchett. And I tell you what, kids, I knew that. But the only reason... Now, if you're not familiar with Terry Pratchett, he's written loads of books. One of the most popular authors in the UK of all time. He wrote the whole Discworld series. He also wrote Good Omens with Neil Gaiman. He's written loads of books. He's a fantastic author, very funny. The reason I knew that is because The Abominable Snow Baby was made into a cartoon this last Christmas. It's really good, actually. You should check it out. And I knew that Terry Pratchett had written that. So, yeah. And the last one, in which Dickens novel, his first, do the main protagonist and three companions travel to Dingley Dell for a Christmas party? That was The Pickwick Papers. So there you go. Those are your 10. I can tell you what I scored. It was 7. I got 7. I should have got that royal family one. I didn't. So, yeah, that's it. Hope you enjoyed that. Now, let's do this. This episode's recommendation is a podcast I've been listening to lately called Love Letters. This is the blurb. It says, love stories, dating stories, relationship stories, stories about romance, marriage, partnership, sex, loss, and the human heart, served with a side of advice, hosted by Boston Globe advice columnist Meredith Goldstein. And it's just a decent podcast. Yeah, I've been enjoying it. It's each episode's about sort of 20 to 30 minutes long, and it just talks about relationships. Just, yeah, I just thought I'd mention that one as one I've been listening to. I've mentioned this before, being a gardener, working on my own all day long. I've got 8 hours a day where I listen to podcasts, so I get through a lot. And this is one of those that I've been enjoying. So, yeah, check it out. Love Letters with Meredith Goldstein. You'll have no trouble finding it anywhere you get your podcasts. That's this episode's recommendation. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a big thank you to Benji for his memory, Bob for his two segments, and of course Scott for reading out the story of St. Nicholas. Really appreciate their input. If you want to get involved, please do. Here's the email address. It's totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go onto the website, and that is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love ya. Merry Christmas!
What? You don't like to make toys?
No.
Herbie doesn't like to make toys!
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 Toys? Shame on you!
Do you mind telling me what you do want to do?
Well, sir, someday I'd like to be a dentist.